3 hours, Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa, coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Dave DeForest reporting. Belgium emerges with police officers standing guard. Schools and about half of the Brussels commuter rail system reopened Wednesday. It had been locked down after the Paris terrorist attacks last week. The city still remains under the highest alert level. Meanwhile, French lawmakers have decided to continue airstrikes in Syria against the Islamic State group. U.S. President Barack Obama is telling Americans that he knows of no specific or credible threat of an attack on America over the Thanksgiving holiday weekend.
I want the American people to know, entering the holidays, that the combined resources of our military, our intelligence, and our Homeland Security agencies are on the case.
The president spoke Wednesday after meeting with his national security team. Pope Francis has arrived in Kenya at the start of a tour in Africa. Besides Kenya, the pontiff also plans stops in Uganda and the Central African Republic. The Pope spoke of environmental concerns in a speech at State House in Nairobi.
The grave environmental crisis facing our world demands an ever greater sensitivity to relationship between human beings and nature.
On Thursday, the Pope will hold an interfaith meeting at the Vatican's diplomatic mission in the Kenyan capital. Later in the day, he will conduct Mass at the University of Nairobi. A U.S. defense official says the Pentagon is monitoring reports that a convoy of humanitarian vehicles was hit in an airstrike Wednesday near Azaz, Syria. Reuters video shows aid trucks on fire near the Bab al-Salam border crossing. It was not immediately clear to what group the trucks belonged. This is VOA News. Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov said Wednesday Turkey's downing of a Russian warplane, in his words, looks like a planned provocation. But Lavrov said Russia is not going to war with Turkey. He said the incident will make Russia reconsider its relationship with Turkey. Dorian Jones reports on possible economic fallout from the shoot-down incident.
Russian Prime Minister Dmitry Medvedev has warned that Turkish companies could lose projects and markets. Such a warning is all too real for Turkey's economy, says chief economist İnan Demir of the Istanbul-based Finance Bank.
Russia is Turkey's more important export markets, and the other is the tourism channel.
Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov on Tuesday warned Russian tourists to stay away from Turkey because of what he says are terrorist threats. Dorian Jones, Istanbul.
The World Meteorological Organization says average global temperatures in 2015 are likely to be the hottest ever recorded. It says the effects of climate change have led to global temperature increases of 1 degree Celsius above the pre-industrial era. Michel Giraud is head of the WMO.
2015 will be the warmest year on record since we have records.
That report comes out just a week before world leaders meet in Paris for the 2015 United Nations Climate Change Conference. A U.S. military investigation concluded Wednesday that American and Afghan forces misidentified a target in Kunduz, Afghanistan last month. That mistake resulted in an aerial attack on a hospital that killed at least 31 people, mostly doctors and patients. The report said the crew of a U.S. plane had intended to hit a compound believed to have been seized by Taliban fighters. But based on a physical description of the target provided by Afghan forces, the crew instead fired at a hospital operated by Doctors Without Borders. Christopher Stokes is the general director of the charity.
We see this catalogue of errors, this multiplicity of different mistakes that occurred as being some kind of sign of gross negligence in a way.
Christopher Stokes, Ukraine has closed its airspace to all Russian planes and has stopped buying Russian natural gas after exporter Gazprom announced it would halt deliveries in the country. Ukrainian Prime Minister Arseniy Yatsenyuk said at a cabinet meeting Wednesday that the government decided to ban all Russian flights from crossing Ukraine's airspace, quoting now, as an issue of the national security, as well as a response to Russia's aggressive actions, end of quote. In Washington, I'm Dave DeForest.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm Peter Clote in Washington, sitting in for James Batty. Today's Thursday, November 26, and here are some of the stories we are covering. The U.S. government has begun putting sanctions on Burundian officials who are involved in stoking the ongoing political and security crisis.
And I think the clear message here is those who take a path of violence and repression will face serious consequences, as targeted as possible on those individuals.
Thomas Perriello is the U.S. Special Envoy for the Great Lakes region of Africa. Pope Francis continues his three-day official state visit to Kenya. A senior official says other African regional blocs can learn from the experience of ECOWAS in combating terrorism.
The Committee of Police Chiefs, these are some of the lessons that other regions have now seen. With this now, they have a sharing of information.
Dr. Remy Ajibewa is the ECOWAS Director for Political Affairs. The recent terrorist attack in Mali has heightened security in the neighboring country, Guinea. And South Sudan government says the rebel representatives are unlikely to arrive in the capital, Juba, today as originally planned. Those stories plus Mark Ome's sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The U.S. government has begun putting sanctions on Burundian officials who are involved in stoking the ongoing political and security crisis in that country that has forced over 200,000 refugees to flee. On Monday, Washington imposed sanctions on four Burundian officials. Thomas Perriello, the U.S. Special Envoy for the Great Lakes region of Africa, tells me it is critical for both the government in Bujumbura and the opposition to engage in political dialogue to restore peace to the Central African nation.
We think the situation is extremely severe in terms of the humanitarian crisis, but also the political and security crisis. And we, like the AU and the UN, have said there need to be consequences for those who are undermining peace and undermining democracy in the country. And therefore, we have begun a process of sanctioning individuals, both on the government side, who've been pursuing repressive tactics, and on the opposition side, from those who chose to resort to an attempted coup, which is not the right approach for solving this crisis. It's a political dialogue mediated by regional actors.
What is the significance of this targeted sanctions, and do you believe that it will have the needed impact to help with the process of resolving the crisis in Burundi?
We think it's very important for leaders on both the government and opposition side to be voices for peace and for political dialogue. And I think the clear message here is those who take a path of violence and repression will face serious consequences, as targeted as possible on those individuals. And those who are being constructive voices for the people of Burundi, who more than anything else want a chance for freedom of speech, a chance for security, a chance to get back on the path Burundi has been on for 10 years of progress and reconciliation. Those voices have a place at the peace talks that are so important, and those who undermine it will face consequences like sanctions.
Well, supporters of the administration say that it will be unfortunate for any international intervention, and they say that the sanctions is a form of intervention and that they should be left for Burundians to resolve it themselves. So what is your reaction to such statement coming from supporters of the administration?
Well, unfortunately, the government seems to be losing a lot of credibility and leverage, both with its own people in the region, and that continues with their desperate act today to crack down on civil society groups that have a long and proud tradition of standing up for the people of Burundi and the basic freedoms in Burundi. We're trying to offer the government our best advice, and we believe getting to the peace talks to get Burundi back on a path of progress and democracy is the right path, and that trying to escalate tactics of repression and violence are only going to create more pain for the people of Burundi.
What is the U.S. doing, apart from this targeted sanctions, to work with the regional bloc, the EAC, the continental bloc, the African Union, and the United Nations, the rest of the international community, to help resolve this crisis in Burundi?
Well, our top priority is to get a credible peace process started under regional leadership, and President Museveni has promised to get those talks started any day. We believe both the EAC and the African Union have an important role to play, and we've certainly seen strong leadership from the AU in this regard. So we stand ready to support both the government and opposition in their participation and the region in their leadership of a peace process that is the only credible path forward for a peaceful resolution of restoring Burundi's path that it's been on for the last decade of post-conflict reconciliation.
Thomas Perriello is the U.S. Special Envoy for the Great Lakes region of Africa. He spoke with me from here in Washington, D.C. A senior official at the Economic Community of West African State, or ECOWAS, says other regional blocs can learn from the policies the West African grouping has been implementing to combat violent extremism in Africa. Dr. Remy Ajibewa, the ECOWAS Director for Political Affairs, says member countries within the region have been collaborating and sharing intelligence and information as part of an effort to combat terrorism in the region. Ajibewa's comment came after Islamist militants recently attacked a hotel in Mali's capital, Bamako. But speaking at a panel on violent extremism at the UN headquarters in New York, Ajibewa says ECOWAS has a rich body of experience in countering extreme violence in the region through its counterterrorism strategy.
We all agree that because of the issue of poverty and the porosity of the borders over there, as well as the Libyan problem, led to why some of these guys came to Mali, came to Nigeria and some other areas. And against that background, they started perpetrating all these atrocities. However, we also realize that there's a need to look at the root cause of all the problem. And when you look at the root cause, which could be traced from the structural perspective, basically that because of the inequality and because of the grievances that has been forced out by some of these people who believe that they've been marginalized.
During your presentation, what do you think other regional bodies, like in the East Africa or the Horn of Africa, learn from the experiences or the policies implemented by both ECOWAS and ECAS?
Yeah, one area, the lessons learned. One, for example, in the ECOWAS region, we have what we call the Committee of Chiefs of Staff of Member States, the Committee of Police Chiefs. These are some of the lessons that other regions have now seen. With this now, they have a sharing of information. Another lesson that other regions have also learned, that some member countries in ECOWAS, for example, Nigeria, they've not only looking at the palliative measures, they've also taken into recognition that terrorists that denounce that position or have fled from that place, how are you going to reintegrate them? So the issue of reintegration is another point which Nigeria has already set up a center. So likewise, all of us have been focusing, all major partners or other countries have been focusing on the military perspective, ignoring the victims as well as even those that have left that terrorist enclave.
Doc, recently there was a very unfortunate incident where hostages were taken in Mali. However, from your initial submission, ECOWAS has done enough to curtail some of these violent activities or terrorism activities in that part of Africa. Going forward, how is ECOWAS working to ensure the cooperation of individual member countries to further nip this in the bud?
Thanks. You've rightly said it. Member states are even the guarantors of security. And against that background, if you look at the counterterrorism strategy of ECOWAS, there is a master plan, the plan of action, and enters or gives power to every member state to make sure that they believe and belong and believe that an attack on a member country is an attack on all members. So against that background, what the plan of action has instituted in place is that every member state should be able to guide and at the same time provide information to other members to be alert.
Dr. Remi Ajibewa is the ECOWAS Director for Political Affairs. He spoke with me from New York. Pope Francis landed in Nairobi Wednesday afternoon and was given a red carpet welcome by Kenya's President Uhuru Kenyatta, along with traditional dancers and singers. His arrival marks the start of a six-day trip to Africa that will also take him to Uganda and the Central African Republic. VOA's East Africa correspondent Jill Craig has more.
Kenyans began congregating near the highway Pope Francis would travel down a few hours prior to his arrival. And the mood was one of jubilation, as evidenced by self-described staunch Catholic Purity Ndemo.
I'm very excited. Like, I've never seen him. I've been seeing him in TV. So I can't wait to see him live.
A sentiment echoed by non-Catholic Michael Nyamongo.
I mean, I'll be just happy at least for the first time the Pope is coming to Africa and I have the experience to see him come to Africa. It's just nice. It's just fantastic.
Bridging this gap between people of all religions and ethnicities is one of Pope Francis's main themes. Here's what he said at President Kenyatta's residence during his welcome ceremony.
Experience shows that violence, conflict, and terrorism feed on fear, mistrust, and despair born of poverty and frustration. Ultimately, the struggle against these enemies of peace must be carried on by men and women who fearlessly believe in and bear honest witness to the great spiritual and political values which inspired the birth of the nation.
Kenya has seen terrorist attacks by militant group Al-Shabaab, while the Central African Republic, the third and final stop on the Pope's Africa tour, remains mired in sectarian violence. And when asked along his route if he worried about the risk of violence during this trip, the Pope responded that he was more worried about the mosquitoes. The Pope is expected to address topics like helping the poor, giving hope to youth, caring for the environment, and leading through good governance throughout the course of his African tour. Pope Francis will meet on Thursday with Catholic leaders, as well as those of different faiths, and will hold Mass at the University of Nairobi. He is also scheduled to meet with officials at the United Nations Environment Program. Jill Craig, VOA News, Nairobi.
Today is Thursday, November 26, and you are listening to Daybreak Africa on The Voice of America. I'm Peter Clote in Washington. Please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Ahead on our program, Mark Omer Sports and our Listener of the Day. The terrorist attack in Mali that killed 21 people Friday at a Bamako hotel has heightened security concerns in neighboring West African countries like Guinea, where the president says he intends to roll out a host of new security measures. For VOA, Karim Kamara reports from the Guinean capital, Conakry.
Following the attack in neighboring Mali, Guinean President Alpha Conde has said authorities must submit information on foreigners living in the capital area. The governor has given mayors and area chiefs 72 hours to do so. Addressing local leaders Tuesday, Conde said only Guineans will be allowed to teach in Quranic schools. He says we cannot allow foreigners to come in to indoctrinate our children. He says we have enough Quranic teachers already. Conde said construction of new mosques and Quranic schools will be halted to investigate the sources of revenue. He said he will also want to ban the wearing of burqas, the garment worn by some Muslim women to cover their bodies when in public. He says a full veil makes it difficult to know whether the individual is a male or female. He says we cannot wait until what happened in Mali happens here to take precautions. Neighboring Senegal has also said it is considering banning burqas. Chad and the far north region of Cameroon banned them earlier this year amid attacks by Boko Haram. The concern is that attackers or suicide bombers could use burqas to conceal weapons or their identities. Guinea has not had any terrorist attacks, but President Conde says the country must remain vigilant. Karim Kamara for VOA News, Conakry.
South Sudan government spokesman Michael Makuei says the advance team from the SPLM in opposition and the former detainees will not visit Juba today, Thursday, as scheduled. He tells South Sudan in Focus's John Tanza that the government in Juba cannot implement the peace agreement without the presence of SPLM-IO and the former detainees.
The former detainees These were supposed to be arriving tomorrow, but unfortunately, the IGAD did not send them the tickets up to now. In case they receive the tickets now, then they may arrive tomorrow.
John Luke just told the media that the government in Juba refused to purchase their tickets.
We are not under duty to buy them their tickets. It is the duty of the IGAD to send them tickets. We are not under duty to transport the STLMA-IO to Juba. It is the IGAD that is responsible for that. Our task, our responsibility starts at the airport upon arrival. We receive them and accommodate them, transport them, do whatever, render them all the required services, but not to transport them.
And IGAD is also saying that it is the responsibility of the warring parties to ensure that they implement the peace agreement.
If it is the responsibility of the warring parties, let each party transport itself into Juba.
But how will they do that when they don't have the money?
Well, we don't. If it is the responsibility of the parties, of the warring parties, then each party is supposed to transport itself to Juba. And from the Juba airport, International Airport, we will receive them and accord them and render to them all the necessary services are required.
And what was the significance of this visit tomorrow by the former detainees? What is the importance of their visit?
I don't know what is the importance, because what they came for, this is supposed to be an advanced team. This is supposed to be an advanced team. Unfortunately, it's not an advanced team. It is the whole team minus the leader of the team.
What was the advanced team supposed to come and do in Juba?
The advanced team is supposed to come in a small number so that we come and discuss and resolve some of the outstanding issues.
And what are some of these outstanding issues?
I think that is irrelevant.
Some of the deadlines that you and the rebels agreed on have passed.
The agreement says they shall be in Juba in mid-November. Before that, we agreed that they should be sending us the list of their delegation so that we make the necessary arrangements for their mobility and accommodation. They did not send us the list in time. So we told them, we wrote to them and told them that we are extending your time of arrival here to the 26th, and please write to us, give us the list of your advanced teams in time so that we can make the necessary arrangements. Not that only, but IGAD also wrote to them, informing them to submit their list before the 23rd. It was only yesterday that we received the list of the FDs. But up to this moment, we have not received the list of the IOs.
And how does that impact on the implementation of the peace agreement?
We are already behind schedule, if you are talking about the impact. As the government of South Sudan, we are supposed to receive our brothers and sisters with whom we have signed the agreement so that they join us and start the implementation of agreement from this end. Now, the chairperson of JEMEC, of Joint Monitoring and Evaluation Commission, is already in Juba. And we will have the first sitting of JEMEC in Juba on the 27th. And in case they don't come, then definitely we will not be in a position to proceed. That will be very unfortunate.
Michael Makwe is South Sudan's Minister of Information and Government spokesman. He spoke with South Sudan in Focus's John Tanza. It's now time for Daybreak Africa Sport. Here's Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Good Thursday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, Peter. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we focus on football. Guest side Malawi dismissed Djibouti 3-0 as South Sudan and Sudan battled to a scoreless draw in Group C action at the Council of Eastern Central Africa Football Association's SECAFA Senior Challenge Cup in Bahir Dar, some 320 kilometers north of the Ethiopian capital Addis Ababa, on Wednesday. Consequently, Malawi is the second team to qualify for the quarterfinals after Tanzania mainland. They top Group C with 6 points. South Sudan have 4. Sudan has 1 point, and Djibouti has yet to secure a point with 1 round left to the end of the group contest. Staying with CECAFA, defending champions Kenya came from behind to draw 1-1 with Burundi in Group B action before Ethiopia outplayed Somalia 2-0 in Group A fixtures played in Awasa, some 270 kilometers south of the Ethiopian capital Addis Ababa. This win revives Ethiopia's hopes of a place in the last eight as they tie with Rwanda on 3 points behind group leaders Tanzania mainland. In Group B, Kenya and Burundi tie with 4 points. Uganda has 3 points, while Zanzibar has no point. Today, Thursday, is a rest day for all teams ahead of the final round of group matches. In Senegal, Nigeria's under-23 side arrived in Dakar on Wednesday following a 10-day camp in Gambia. The Nigerians played to a 1-1 draw with Gambia's under-20 side in a build-up match in Brikama, some 35 kilometers south of the Gambian capital, Banjul. Nigeria is in Senegal for the under-23 African Nations Championship starting this coming weekend. They are drawn in Group B with Algeria, Egypt, and Mali. In Switzerland, FIFA and the Confederation of African Football have set the 24th of June next year as the date for the draws for the third round of the Africa qualifiers for the 2018 FIFA World Cup, FIFA disclosed in Zurich. The 20 teams vying for the 5 slots allocated to Africa are Algeria, Burkina Faso, Cameroon, Cape Verde Islands, the Democratic Republic of Congo, Republic of Congo, Egypt, Gabon, Ghana, and Guinea. Others include African champions Ivory Coast, Libya, Mali, Morocco, Nigeria, Senegal, South Africa, Tunisia, Uganda, and Zambia. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, Peter, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good day. Here's our listener mail for this Thursday morning, November 26.
The nation was a repetition from her annual message. I believe the president should have commented on new approaches towards development and the ways for improving the lives of the Liberian people. But for repeating what was posted in her annual message, I think it's a disservice to the Liberian people. Thank you.
Thank you, listener, for your comment. Please send your viewpoints to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. You can also call us in the United States at 202-205-9942. That's 202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us a message. Well, that's it for this Thursday, November 26th edition of Daybreak Africa. Join us again tomorrow for more African news and features right here on the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporter Ricky Shryock, as well as sports editor Mark Ouma, I'm Peter Clote in Washington saying, have a nice day, Africa.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of VOA's Encounter. Join me and two advocates from the world of politics, public policy, or academia debating critical and controversial issues of our day, bringing depth, perspective, and insight to the world around us. You can listen to Encounter on Saturdays and Sundays. On Saturdays, tune in at 3:30 and 14:30 UTC. And on Sundays at 5:30 and 17:30 UTC. Or subscribe to the Encounter podcast. Just go to our homepage at voanews.com and click on podcasts. Also, we love to hear from you. Send an email to encounter@voanews.com or connect with us on Facebook at facebook.com/Carol Castiel VOA. That's Encounter on VOA Africa.
Feast with your ears on Music Time in Africa. Your connection to the best pan-African music. Hello, this is Heather Maxwell, inviting you to join me every Saturday and Sunday at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
This one, this one,
every show brings you the best music from across the continent, old songs you know and love, and new songs to discover. You'll meet artists, too. Listen to Africa's superstars and rising stars in exclusive, unplugged interviews on the radio or on my YouTube channel. Search for Heather Maxwell, Music Time in Africa. We play only the best right here on VOA Africa.